This is GamesAtWork.biz with Michael Martin and Michael Rowe, your weekly podcast about gaming technology and play. The thoughts and opinions on this podcast are those of the hosts and guests alone and not the opinions of any organization which we have been, are, or may be affiliated with.
This is episode 298, Black Friday and Light Beer. Hello and welcome again to another edition of GamesAtWork.biz. This is Michael Martin, one of your co-hosts for the show today, and I'm super delighted to be joined by my friend and co-host, Mr. Michael Rowe. Hello, Michael.
Hello, Michael Martin. I'm super happy to be here. And when I say happy, I mean Danny Elfman happy. Oh. Welcome, Andy. Great to have you back.
Hello, friends. How are you?
Very well.
Peachy.
Good. I'm glad to hear it. It's nice to be back.
You know, guys, we're going to be enjoying a few things over the span of the next week, and we're starting off the show with a happy note, I think, here, too, with all the folks in the U.S. Celebrating their version of Thanksgiving next Thursday and potentially Friday and more. There's some interesting, almost April Fool's-ish sort of products that look like they're available to get people in that happy celebratory mood. And Michael, the first one that you found is a special video game console.
Yes. Yes. Because what nothing says Thanksgiving like light beer. No. Actually, I'm not a big fan of light beer, but I saw this and this was hilarious. Bud Light put out this, we'll call it limited edition, video game console that holds two cans of beer, looks like a six-pack, all in blue, and includes a Pico projector, six games, and controllers to allow you to keep your two beers cold and play video games. And, you know, what could be more thankful than that?
It's way too funny. And the fact that it keeps your beers cold, you know, that's pretty good.
Well, the great thing is with light beer, you have to have it cold because otherwise it tastes horrible. The colder, the better.
I saw this as Bud's attempt to compete with the current rash of next-gen consoles because it's got 16 gig of memory and includes six games. Tekken 7 and Soul Calibur 6. It's pretty cool. The idea that it's got the projector built in and it's kind of got this carry case, obviously, because it's a six pack and, you know, it's got a carry handle. I mean, it's a fun novelty. The only small issue is the price.
Oh.
Yeah.
So there's one of them and it's all being auctioned and I think it's something like $8,500 at the moment, which seems a little rich for my liking, to be honest.
Well, that's gone up quick because on Tuesday when this article was written, it was only $1,000. So if it's up at $8,500 now, people really want this thing.
luckily, if you want it, you can just outbid the current bidder by $1, and you'll be all set.
So sniping it, right? Snipe the bid.
Holy moly!
And it's funny. They also reference in this article the Miller Lite controller. And again, it's light beer, right?
Not to be outdone.
But that one's actually, but it's actually kind of cool, right? It's an actual can of beer with a built-in controller on the side and I guess a Bluetooth adapter on the bottom that then communicates to your console. So it's got, you know, your up, down, left, right buttons, your AB buttons, etc., built into the can. Interesting novelty, but they just did for the controller. They didn't go for the whole game console. And, you know, if you're going to drink light beer, you might as well be playing video games and enjoy something.
and they do feature the haptic feedback as well, which I would also imagine has a liquid refreshment feedback feature too.
Are you sure it's a haptic feedback or is it just because you've had four or five controllers?
The more control you want, the more haptic it will feel. Hey, you know, so related to this, and we're not leaving the adult beverage topic here just yet. I saw something that was pretty funny too. The folks over at Jose Cuervo now have an opportunity that if you can't be with your family this Thanksgiving, but wish to be there anyway, you can send. Oh gosh, what was it? It was flat somebody.
I can't remember.
There's a story.
It's a cardboard cutout of you.
It's a cardboard cutout of you, right? So the
holding winner, tequila.
Yeah, the winner of this will have a Cuervo double drinker, is what they're calling it. So you take a picture of yourself holding your favorite Jose Cuervo beverage, and if you're the lucky winner, they will make a cardboard cutout and ship it to your family to be there where you cannot.
Yes, they will.
So I thought this was kind of funny too, because in the U.S., and I don't remember if we talked about this on the show, there are a number of stadia, plural, where stadia. If you cannot go to watch your favorite sports teams do their sports-related thing, you can get a cardboard cutout of you put in the stands that will now silently be there and not listen to anyone around them saying, please sit down.
But by the way, you know, last week or earlier this week, my wife and I saw an article and we immediately thought of you, Michael. And that is the NCAA tournament is going to be in a bubble.
Yep.
I know
and that bubble is not kinda, Raleigh, which kind of bites.
Normally you would go to at least the regional ACC games as your version of Mecca for the week, right?
Yep.
And your pilgrimage,
religious
however
holidays,
you want to call it.
Yes.
Your holiday. And we were both thinking about you and saying, well, you know, at least they'll have the tournament, right? So I know that means a lot to you.
Yeah, it's very strange. Basketball season is starting up next week, and it's one of those believe it or not sort of things for me. So I'm going to be happy to watch some of this on television, but at the same time I'm concerned for the players and all those involved. The football season actually seems to have gone relatively well, but there are cancellations and delays that happen when there's an outbreak with one or another team. So we'll see what happens with my personal favorite sport, which is basketball, as you've alluded to, Michael.
Yes.
Now, Moving out of the adult beverage, or maybe not just adult beverage, but clean up in aisle six part of the show, we have an example here of the use of robots to come do the sanitation that's necessary to keep things on the up and up, if you will.
And I can't remember if we talked about the one, I guess about a month ago, that they were testing on airplanes that had the ultraviolet lights on bars that would come up and go around the seats and kind of go down the center aisle that would be able to turn a plane in like 15 or 20 minutes.
Wow.
So
I don't think we did. I don't think we did.
I remember it. I remember looking at the video on it. I remember, I guess I just didn't get it into the show, but this is in that same vein, but it's more, both a spray based one, right? That uses a disinfectant and can
right.
clean a space in a 200,000 square foot office building in 2 to 2.5 hours compared to the full crew going completely overnight to do the thing. But I think this is great that this is happening. I think it's important. The one thing that I do find interesting is, you know, just spraying more stuff on. Yes, that will kill germs and bacteria, et cetera. But it's not going to mop up the mess.
Right.
So,
yeah, I mean, it can go around spraying, but it can't go around wiping and all that sort of stuff as well, right? So, yeah.
But there's a solution to that, isn't there, Andy? Like the Roomba scuba robot's got some of
the cleanup? Yeah, that's right. Yeah, I mean, but that's for floors, right? I mean, so the idea here is you're trying to disinfect an office and desk space and all the other sort of surfaces. So I think it is a fascinating idea, and obviously with, you know, when you're working with aerosol kind of things, it's not entirely pleasant for humans to be spraying and cleaning with that stuff. You know you're going to end up wearing a mask or something yourself, so if you can just leave something to go ahead and get it all done, kind of fumigate the place, I guess, for you,
yeah,
then you know, that seems useful.
One of the things I think about is, and we, you know, we have to think about this stuff nowadays, is, you know, when you come in the morning, you're going to have to clean off all your monitors, et cetera. And before you leave, you're going to have to go in and make sure your coffee cup's empty and flipped upside down, right? So it's face down so you don't have crap floating in there because you don't want to drink disinfectant.
One would hope that that's not what is on your list of things as your adult beverage of choice, wouldn't it? Yeah.
Well, it depends.
Well, we don't advise it.
We do not advise it. Don't even joke about it.
So the next article that we have here, we could actually go in a lot of different directions on it. So your HQ, you know, coming into an office is good if it's disinfected and clean, right? Absolutely. However, there are a number of companies that are viewing distributed or not coming into an office as part of the de facto standard, not just for the foreseeable future, but going on for the very long term. And there have been plenty of articles written about how there's Zoom fatigue and there's all this video conferencing sort of stuff that are making people a little nuts, and some ideas around gamifying the experience and to do more in virtual reality and such to bring us forward. This particular TechCrunch article had a few examples in it, and I found the idea of the multiplayer games being interesting, but things that we've seen before, right? So a representation of a physical space that you can now signal that you're in deep thought and working hard on that spreadsheet or presentation, or you're available for someone to drop by and notice that you're open and aware, not just because there's a green light next to your name that says you're on the system, but because you are more approachable. I'm curious to know if you know, either of you feel like a Sims type experience would be something that would be preferable to what we have today as a way of signaling and somehow I'm approachable. You can connect with me, at least drop in and say hi, which is part of that social engagement that we do get at work on a regular basis. But it's hard to do when you don't know if someone is in a meeting or busy or not busy. What do y'all think?
The awareness thing was always something that we enjoyed in Second Life. You know, the presence, you know, the ability to know who was in the room, who was paying attention. And one of the things I like about this particular story and the branch technology is that they've not taken a, you know, a full-on 3D immersive virtual world approach to it. They've taken, you know, this sort of 2D map kind of approach where you can still see who is where and who is talking with whom and, you know, who is available and who, you know, and then you can kind of overlay video onto that. I think that's kind of, I think all that stuff's neat. I think just, yeah, the availability thing is interesting. I think there's an assumption and some of the time when you're using tools like Slack that have, you know, the away, active, you know, offline approach, but they're still asynchronous.
Right.
That, you know, I quite often have somebody Slack me during the morning and I may not have started work at that point in the morning, so I get back to them a couple of hours later and I still have the guilt myself feeling, oh, I should have been responding straight away because, you know, although I was marked as away, they could see that I was connected, you know. So I think the idea of having the kind of that combined with physical presence is interesting. And the reason I wasn't on the show last week was I was at a virtual conference where they had as well as having streaming video content and a chat room. So they had streaming video through Vimeo, they had a chat room through Discord. And then at the end of each session, you'd have a Q&A, which was kind of in this. And I don't remember the technology they were using, but it was kind of a similar kind of 2D overhead conference space with round tables where you could move around and cluster with one another and, you know, go and stand with the presenter and ask questions afterwards. I can't remember what the technology was they were using for that, but it was interesting to see the growth of those kind of tools.
I'm trying to remember the one that Michael, you and I tested one out, I want to say 4 or 5 years ago,
yeah,
maybe even 6 years ago, that reminds me a lot of Branch,
uh-huh.
Right? The tops down, build out an office space,
Or a city park.
And remember doors that you
city
can
park
close.
Sort of thing, too.
They had a yacht. Remember the yacht?
Yeah.
And your icon was literally just a small smiley face emoticon that you could change the expression on, right? Mm-hmm. And the thing that I liked, and Andy, I think this goes to your perspective, too, is you could go into an office and close the door, right? And that signaled you could not interrupt that person. That's like a do not disturb. If the door was open, you could walk in. And I have the same guilt that you have, right? If I accidentally start up Slack late at night and I see somebody has Slacked me, I will respond because I'm like, you know, I shouldn't. I should wait till tomorrow morning, or I should wait, you know. But I feel that, they've asked for something. I know the answer. Let me react and respond. And having the ability to put up those social barriers between work and home, even though we're all sleeping at work right now, or working from home, whichever way you want to call it, is important to send the right signals and not driving guilt for not responding, right? So actually one of the people responded immediately back to me saying, hey, I was just putting it here for when you got in the morning. Don't feel you have to respond, right? And so there's the technology aspect, which I think is cool, right? And then there's the social aspect that we need to kind of all mature on and come to a level of agreement and an understanding that says, hey, just because, even if you're using something like Branch, just because the door's open, if it's after hours, maybe you shouldn't go in there. Or there should be some signal that, yeah, I'm really not here, even though I'm in the office, right?
Part of what I'm contemplating around this, too, is that it kind of like in Minecraft, where you've got the fog and the horizon around you. And when you're moving from place to place, you're able to see a little bit more as you get closer to it. There may be some intriguing ways of constraining your conversation to where physically you are in that virtual space, so that you're more hearing and seeing in the text chat what's going on with that set of population. So there might be some interesting things that sort of experience could lend itself well to. Because that way you're kind of like in your situation, Michael, if you're working after hours, and even if your door is open, you might overhear what's in the hallway, but you're not necessarily paying a lot of attention to it. You're not going to hear what's going on in the other room over.
Yeah, and maybe that the reason you're working after hours is because you need that quiet time to be alone to actually get the work done,
right?
Because of all the meetings during the day. Not that that ever happens nowadays.
No.
But I do, and Andy, you brought up kind of those early days in Second Life where the presence was so important, and I thought it was really cool when they introduced spatial audio, right? Where you could tell if somebody was further away or closer, right? You could hear that difference, and I can imagine a similar thing with text chat where it's, you know, very light and then darkens and fades in as it gets closer to you, or fades out as the person is further away, as a way to minimize the noise, right?
I could see where that would be really good too. And while I'm enjoying the Zelda-esque, you know, kind of view of the world that these examples are giving, I got to wonder too about the level of adoption. It, like Slack, took a while to really take hold in the populations that I worked around with, and it's very well adopted now. I kind of wonder what it's going to take for people to jump in there.
Yeah. So they need to enable it on the Switch.
Hey, well, speaking of which, you know, so Andy, the word on the street here in the U.S. is that there will be more Switches available for Black Friday and some, you know, special deals available. So the hen's teeth example, you know, may be a thing of the past if we're lucky
well,
here in the U.S.
So I was reading that Xbox Series X, they were saying that there'll be limited supplies until April, but there's talk of some more coming out into supply in the UK over the next couple of days. We'll see what happens. But I've seen some ridiculous pictures of stockpiled PS5s where people have bought, you know, very large numbers of them, are selling them off at incredible prices. It's really sad to see, really. I mean, I understand it's the way the market works, but it's really frustrating for people that genuinely want to get, gaming with the next gen and maybe buy gifts for their family for the holidays. So, yeah.
And you were saying, as we're kind of getting the show rolling, that you're looking for the Xbox to grace your home too, right? Is that the
I'd love the Series X. I mean, I think most of the current reviews say, you know, really what you're getting is a much faster, smoother experience because the user interface is the same as on the One X, which is what I currently have. But you're setting yourself up for the future, and it there's some great stuff looking on the horizon. So that's what I'm into upgrading to at the moment, if I have the opportunity. If I have to wait, I can do that.
Cool. Well, if you were going to go downtown to see about picking one of these things up, you might want to consult Google Maps for the new features that it's bringing to bear these days. There was an article that was talking about how Google Maps is now looking at the busyness of some of the mass transit systems. So you could say, hey, is the tube particularly crowded right now or not? And that might influence your decisions about when to go and when not to go. I was interested in this because I feel like it's certainly taking advantage of the crowdsourcing capabilities of what people with which devices are out where. And I feel like it's actually a good thing to do as you're trying to sort out when do you go and when might you not go. What do you fellas think about it?
Yeah, I mean, this has been available for some time, but it's very rarely been, you know, as live as this. This is obviously the difference here is it's real time rather than, you know, estimated based on a sample of devices. There's an argument that says it's incredibly creepy, but then, you know, it's not necessarily identifying you individually. Clearly, you know, there's a device identifier. They know that it's an Android device in a particular location or on a particular route. It's super useful stuff. It's the same way that they've been able to optimize traffic on Google Maps for a long time as well. It's no real different to that. I'm interested to see they've also added live status for takeout and delivery in certain countries, and one of those countries that isn't included is the UK, but that's no big deal. I mean, I use apps like Deliveroo, and they, you know, show you the current location of your rider, so those things don't bother me too much. But it's interesting to see how they're all coming together in a single place on the Google platform.
Yeah, and the other interesting part about this is if you think about all that data that they're mining in order to do that, I can definitely understand how things like COVID contact tracing could work, right? We've had little success from what I've seen in the U.S. on some of the contact tracing. As a matter of fact, I was listening to, I can't remember if it was the Accidental Tech podcast this week or Connected, one of those podcasts, and one of the hosts actually in New York State had come down with COVID. And there was no contact tracing done by the local government. He was in a small town. He ended up calling everyone he knew and saying, no one's reached out to me, but I'm reaching out to you, and kind of doing reverse contact tracing himself just to let people know. Even though, you know, felt like he was doing all the right things. As we get more and more of this kind of data from mobile devices, once you can correlate that to somebody who is infected, there's a big positive. Matter of fact, I actually installed the North Carolina app on my phone, but you have to, one, opt in, no problem there. Two, you have to self-report.
Yep.
So, but there's people doing that is, there's good, hey, you know me and privacy.
Yep.
There's goodness on that, but at the same time, it also makes the value of the data a lot less. Because a lot of people, A, are not going to install the app, and B, if they are, they're not going to self-report. So how do you kind of square that circle, as the saying goes? But again, the specific use case that Google Maps is doing here around crowdedness of locations is, I think, fantastic, right? It's anonymous. It's just based off of, quote, sensor data. So the number of phones in a certain area at a certain time and then projected from there. So very cool.
Yeah, and I thought it was an extension of what Google had, had already for a while. So you could tell by certain venues, like if you were going to go to a certain store, it would advise you when they were going to be more crowded versus others. You know, not from a COVID perspective, but I could see the applicability now as well that you'd want to avoid crowded times in a particular establishment. But
Yep, we are ramping back up. So I think more people ought to pay attention to how crowded it is.
And maybe one quick shout out too for the North Carolina COVID app. I'm really grateful for the fact that North Carolina actually has one, because when you go to look at what states in the United States actually have them, it isn't that many. And the wacky thing to me is, why couldn't there be one for multiple states or nationally? You know, why does every state need to come up with their own solution for this sort of thing? It's a strange thing for me. All right, so let's switch gears here for a moment about embedding podcasts on the web. This is something, Michael, you found about how we can make things even easier to discover podcasts.
Yeah, no, this is actually I found this so I could embed our podcast on my personal blog. we can make it easier for people who want to listen to either the entire run of the podcast. If you want to go back 297 more episodes and listen to
any one of them,
zero through now, yes, including some of the special episodes that we've done in the past, you can do that through your web browser nowadays, and you don't have to necessarily use any specific podcatcher application. But we are available on many different platforms out there. We'd like to know, you know, is there a platform that you prefer us on that we are not available on today? Or would it be good enough to just get it on the web?
And from our metrics, I'd have to say that there's not a ton of people that are listening directly through the web and the web experience, like on our website itself. Most of you do tend to listen through some specific listening tool. So
yes,
we're happy to support those, of course. Alrighty, moving right along. We talked for a moment earlier too about Minecraft, and now here's another case of a bifecta, Star Wars and Minecraft together, as should have been the case from the beginning. And you can get your own skins that you can now be a little Darth Vader, or you can be a Stormtrooper, or you can be pretty much, well, it looks like lots of different opportunities here, doesn't it?
Yeah, it's much more than skins. I mean, there's been skins available for some time. This is full texture models and mobs and items that you can put in game to represent any of many different environments from Star Wars. And they do some great examples of Tatooine and Hoth and others.
Now, I'm guessing that this was discussed a few months ago and I missed that particular reference, but you know about the Journey to Batuu Sims expansion as well, right? So they made,
no.
Yeah. So there's a pack for Sims 4, where you can basically go on vacation to the Journey to Batuu section of the Disney park. It's very awesome. Different to normal Sims. I mean, it's similar to normal Sims, but you know, you don't have a house, you know, you're not building your house.
Yes,
you've got to go around and impress one or all of the three factions, resistance, smugglers, scoundrels, I think they're called, or First Order, and you can obviously make a lightsaber and all the other stuff. There's been a ton of interesting crossovers in different games with this stuff recently.
Can you moisture farm in that game?
No, I don't think so. But I haven't played it for very long. So far, I've mostly spent my time trying to impress the First Order with my ability to hack, to spread propaganda and hack things. So.
Oh,
if only you had a podcast to be able to spread your propaganda
indeed.
well, speaking very of propaganda cool. And Star Wars, there are some who believe actually the Star Wars Holiday Special, the original, not the Lego one, but the original, was, you know, maybe not that bad. And Michael, you found this interesting documentary about something that seems almost uniquely found to be that bad.
No, this is great. This is actually a documentary that was put together with as many of the people who are still alive that participated in the creation, production, and performing of the original Star Wars holiday special. I want to see this movie when it's available. We talked about before the show started. I saw the original one, not when it originally came out, but I found it on YouTube some years back. And as bad as it is, and yes, it is god-awful bad, it wasn't that bad at the same time, because it was exactly of its time. It's the perfect example of what those 1970s shows were like. If you ever watched Sonny and Cher Show, right? Those variety shows. If you watched, you know, a bad episode of Carol Burnett, right? Because Carol Burnett was good. If you watched the Donny Marie Osmond shows.
A little bit country,
right?
Yeah.
A little bit rock and roll, right? So all of those shows had kind of a shtick that they went for, right? Mm. They had musical numbers. They had cheesy skits. And they had big stars in stupid roles. Right, that was
the winning
whole
combination
thing.
Wasn't it?
It was, and that is exactly what the Star Wars Holiday Special was. Matter of fact, years ago when I was living in Atlanta and I was performing with this one opera group, the director really wanted to do a Christmas special. So we did a Christmas special with, you know, a full operatic chorus. We did a little bit of we actually did a full performance of A Mall and the Night Visitors.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Which I find awful. I can't stand that.
Really?
Yeah, it's awful. And
lots of mall.
But we also did things like we had a horse-drawn carriage come across the stage. We had ice skaters, basically roller skaters, dancing on stage, right? It was a 70s variety show Christmas special, and it ended with the entire cast scattered amongst the audience in this huge, you know, 3,000, 4,000 seat performance hall, holding little bags of candy and tossing candy to kids in the audience.
Oh, breaking the fourth wall.
Oh, God, it was worse than that, because we also had little kids that performed with us. And I had this little girl, she was probably 8, and she was evil. And she was whizzing these candies at people in the audience and just smacking them with it. So you end up, I mean, it was exactly what I remember about 70s variety shows. And to me, the Star Wars Holiday Special is that. It is the epitome of those shows. So, but it is awful. If you're a Star Wars fan, it's awful Star Wars. So what did you think?
Well, I'll have to watch the 40 minutes of this disturbance in the force, a disturbance in the force, and understand a little bit more about how that happened. I don't have the same fond holiday memories, Michael, that you do.
Hey, whizzing candy, come on. You can't have anything better than that.
Well, you know, Andy, here in the U.S., we do have holiday parades, and on the holiday parades, oftentimes there are floats, you know, which might be a truck pulling, you know, something behind them, and people will,
yes,
be on those, and they will throw candy at people,
right,
you know, part,
okay,
of the holiday parade, but not to hurt them, like this girl.
Are you just explaining this to me just because I'm obviously not from there?
Yes.
Okay, that's fine. Thank you. Thank you for the explanation. It'll probably help our listeners in Hungary as well to understand the context.
Yes,
exactly, because they have no idea about these U.S. holiday parades. All right, with 2 minutes to go, a couple things to touch on super fast. Lego, oh my gosh, 9,000 plus pieces of the new
Wasn't
Colosseum.
Awesome?
Oh my goodness.
Yes.
I watched the video on this. It's something to behold. But it's also rather
beautiful.
Redundant. Because there are portions,
yes,
of this Colosseum that are like exactly the same, but
yes,
what a massive thing. Next on the list is the Venture Brothers, which Michael, I'm sure you put there because of me. I actually tweeted at the Adult Swim folks because it looks like they're going back on the cancellation to bring the Venture Brothers back, which I put my support in there too. It's like, yes, I love the Venture Brothers. Go Team Venture. And then closing out, we did talk about the Animaniacs just recently, and they're zany to the max, and they are back again, and they are actually on now, right?
They're on Hulu.
Yeah.
Yep.
And
my plan this coming week is to watch at least one of the episodes.
Yeah, I expect it's good, but I've seen some reviews that have already panned it. But I think they have a special sense of humor that doesn't appeal to everybody. So, you know, if it's not
kind of like the Star Wars Christmas special.
Yeah, that too.
I wonder if it's possible to see that in the UK. Only available, yeah. Hulu's only available in the US. What advice is Tom's Guide giving for the UK? Probably VPN. No, it just says, it literally says, how to watch Animaniacs in the UK, Canada, or Australia. Unfortunately, Hulu is only available in the US. Thanks.
Well, that's not really helpful.
Thanks, Tom's Guide. That's a really helpful article. Fantastic. Love it. I mean, it's like, for example, Discovery, which I just finished watching before we did the show. It's on CBS in the US, I believe.
All Access, yeah.
But it's picked up by Netflix in the UK, so at least I can watch it. Unlike The Mandalorian, which is Disney Plus, and I'm not currently a Disney Plus subscriber, so I'm missing all my Mando loveliness at the moment, which is a shame. But I'm sure I'll catch up at some stage somehow.
Yep, I've been really enjoying it. I have not seen episode or series 3 yet of the CBS All Access Discovery. So you're on season 3.
Of Discovery, yes. Yeah. Yeah. Episode 6 I've just watched. Yeah. Very good. Very good. Okay, very good. Looking like another blinder of a season, I have to say. The quality is staying very high for that show, as far as I'm concerned.
I'm actually looking forward to watching Orville again.
Oh, yeah.
Did you watch Orville?
No, I didn't. But I've got access to it, and I just haven't got around to watching it. So I really should. Too many things to watch.
It's one of these. Yeah. That's just it. Orville is one of those shows that is so much better than it has a right to be.
It's funny, we were I made a list the other week of stuff that we shows that we're consistently watching and which streaming services they're on, because we watch more or less everything on the living room through the Xbox. So we've got Apple TV, which is now available on the Xbox, amusingly, Amazon, Netflix, BBC, Channel 4, and what was the other one we have that we watch stuff on anyway. A series of services, and then we were kind of listing out which shows we're watching, how many episodes are left in each season that we haven't seen yet, what we can pick out to watch if we want to. So it just reminded me that basically all these streaming services have become the new TV channels, right?
And you're paying for each channel.
Yeah, exactly. With far more content than you can possibly absorb. So.
Well, you know, it goes back to Bill Gates' famous saying of the way you make money in software is bundling and unbundling, right? And that's how you do it in TV now, right?
I thought you were going to say everybody 640K should be enough for anybody, but no, obviously we're talking about bundling.
Yes, because, you know, we all complained that cable was so expensive and you got, you know, 300 channels of which you only needed 60 of them.
Right.
Well, now if you buy those 60 channels at $5 to $9 to $15 a month each,
right,
I think you're going to be more expensive than your cable.
Oh, easily, yep.
So,
yep. And then, by the way, you need the internet, the high-speed internet, to get the 4K streams down. So,
absolutely. Well, I know we are out of time, and we really appreciate everybody's input to this week's episode. We hope that you have a chance, if you are in the U.S. and you are taking the holiday off next week, to enjoy some time with family or friends, or
yes,
virtually by yourself, that's fine too. Just enjoy, get some rest and relaxation. And Andy, anything exciting going on in your neck of the woods?
I am probably going to be doing some household DIY this weekend, so not particularly exciting, but hopefully that will mean that I can finally get all of the gadgets and tchotchkes and things that I want to put up around my office in the right spot, so it should be fun.
Excellent. So everybody, thank you very much, and don't forget to tweet at us at games@work_biz or go to our website at games@work.biz. Have a great time, and we'll see you next week.
See ya.
You've been listening to games@work.biz, the podcast about gaming technology and play. We are part of the Blueberry Podcasting Network, and would like to thank the band Random Encounters for their song, Big Blue. You can follow us on Twitter at gamesatwork_biz or at our website at gamesatwork.biz.